Once that condition starts progressing, you're going to gamble, win, lose, or draw. If you go to that moment, it's over. I just heard him weeping, crying. And I said, sir, are you there? Are you okay? And he said, yeah, I just gambled away my last $40,000, something along those lines. Rob, my gut dropped. I started to see that this is a real deadly condition.
Can someone with a gambling problem watch sports as a fan without gambling on the games? Hey everybody, welcome back to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Robbie Fuqua. He's a licensed independent clinical social worker who runs a private practice, and he is here to talk about the differences between sports betting and gambling addiction and other addictive behaviors. Robbie, how's it going?
Hey Rob, how are you? Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, of course, man. And, you know, we're having this conversation right in line with the Super Bowl. While we're recording this, we don't know who's in the Super Bowl, but it's going to get really... Hopefully, we got the Eagles in there and go Birds. Ah. I think that for a lot of people, the Super Bowl represents the day that the most gambling happens. I think it might be the most gambled on event. Before we dive into the reality of that, let's tell people a little bit more about you. What is it that you do on a daily basis?
Yeah. Hey, Rob. Again, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be on the show today. And I want to say this, too. It's an honor to work with the clients that I do that have this issue, this deadly disease, condition, disorder, or whatever you want to call it. And one other thing I do want to say, too, about your Eagles comment, because I know you're from Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk a little bit later on in this about being a fan. And Rob, you know I'm from Dallas, Texas, originally. Mm-hmm. So if anyone knows anything about sports, Philly and Dallas don't. We'll just say this, we don't love each other, right? So that's part of the fun of being a fan. And I'm going to get to that and how you can do that in recovery. I just wanted to make that point before I start into what I do. What I do and how I got into this with my private practice work and how, you know, I'm careful about using the term specialist, but I'm going to say that how this has kind of become, Rob, my specialty, you know, because I would say almost 80 to 90% of the clients that I have, probably even higher, have a problem or issues with sports betting. Not everybody that comes to see me does it turn into or develop into gambling disorder, but most do. Because if you're looking for a therapist, something's going on, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm a career changer. I worked in the business field for a long time. I changed my career and I wanted to go into the field of addiction disorder. I chose to become, and I'm still, you know, happy with this choice, a social worker. So I went back to, you know, I went to school here in Boston, at Boston College, to get my MSW. My wife and I, after I got that, I started working in a mental health facility at a hospital as a crisis clinician. But my wife and I moved back to Chicago and I joined a company that manages problem gambling helplines. So the folks that I interviewed with told me a little bit about this condition. Now, this was years ago, and I did not know about this. I came from the substance use disorder world. Once I started working the lines, once I went through their training program, I started to see that this is a real deadly condition. Mental health condition, disease that kills. And I remember distinctly, Rob, the first time that I had one of my callers, and they were a caller from actually North Carolina. And I'll never forget this. I was building rapport and talking to him on the line. He was calling, of course, the problem gambling helpline. And when you're working on a helpline, you want to build a connection really quickly. So we were talking actually about sports. We were talking about college basketball since he was calling from North Carolina. But I could hear in the background these big wheels rolling on his truck as he was driving away from the casino, right? And he was telling me, we were talking about Duke and we were talking about UNC. And then I would say about 3.5-4 minutes into the conversation, Rob, he stopped talking. I knew he was on the line because I could still hear the wheels turning on the highway, right? 5 to 10 seconds, I just heard him weeping and crying. And I said, sir, are you there? Are you okay? And he said, yeah, I just gambled away my last $40,000, something along those lines. Rob, my gut dropped. In that moment, for a guy who has been exposed to substance addiction all his life and seen what it does to people and family, right? I said, this is a real thing, you know? I don't mind saying, coming out of social work school, in Boston College, I graduated 2013. I didn't know a lot about this behavioral addiction disorder. So that's how I got really started into this. I really dug my head in, worked the problem gambling helplines. The company knew that I had a background in training and teaching. So they put me on the road with some other trainers and in training clinicians in the states that we serve on how to treat gambling disorder, right? So that's kind of how I got into my role now is running that department. I'm coming here today as a private practitioner to talk to you. I'm sure what you asked about was sports betting. What happened was when I moved back to Boston, it was during COVID and I started my practice online. As we know, in 2018, legalized sports gambling, it opened up, right? PASPA was lifted or however the, what the right term is. And it started going through the states. What are we up to now? 38 states now?
39 in DC.
So once that started happening, I started seeing more and more here in Massachusetts. We were just legalized a couple years ago. I went on a local newscast and talked a little bit about sports betting and what I knew and the gambling piece. And then it just exploded when it went live online here for me. You know, I'm a sports person. I'm a big sports fan. I'll say I was a former athlete. I wouldn't call my golfing today being an athlete, but I'm a competitor. I love, and everything I learned and go by were from my high school football years into my running marathons. You know, I don't do that anymore either. But being an athlete and being driven is kind of my template for a lot of things in my life, right? Yeah. And what I have learned, Rob, is when treating gambling disorder via sports betting issues, a lot of that is attached to the pathology of gambling disorder, being competitive, enjoying, you know, wanting to win. All those things can be camouflaged with this pathology and the symptoms of gambling disorder. As I went along, it seemed to me I started taking on more and more former athletes, current athletes, sports fans, all that had issues with gambling disorder. So that's come to where I'm at now. Not, you know, probably 90% of my clients that call me are either current athletes, former athletes, sports betting fans that have now have the symptoms. They're diagnosable with gambling disorder.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you diving into that. And I think that what jumps out right away is that first experience that you had with the helpline. Yeah. You know, with the fact that you were talking to that guy for like 4 or 5 minutes about sports before the emotions kicked up, it kind of goes to show how easily a gambling disorder can be hidden. How about we lay out some of the similarities and the differences? Because there's probably people thinking, how's he comparing alcohol to gambling? Or there's some people thinking, how's he comparing gambling to drugs? What is the similarities and differences across these addictions?
Well, I would say the similarity is, despite the consequences, you continue with the behavior or the substance. You know, think about it. People look at someone with alcohol use disorder and they don't understand, why is he driving that car or why is he drinking on Sunday morning when he has 8 DUIs and he got just divorced? Why is that? Well, because there's a mental health condition connected to this. There's biology connected to this. Why is this person, after he just took $150,000 of his kid's college money and lost it all, why is he gambling right now? Despite consequences, right? To me, that is a mental health condition, right? That's a similarity. I think an emotional gambler or an escape gambler is very similar to someone who suffers from alcohol use disorder or opiate addiction, opiate dependence. Why? Because it's just wanting to escape and numb out, right? Now, you and I both know that these buckets, the escape and action gambler, usually there's two types of gamblers, right? One that gambles to escape and one that gambles for that adrenaline rush and the dopamine rush, both, right? And they can bleed over into other. But if I separate those buckets, I've seen clients who are just escape gamblers, right? My treatment kind of model or perspective is very similar to how I treat someone with a substance use disorder as I do a pure escape gambler. But when we talk about action gamblers, who are mostly your sports bettors, right? The differences are more profound because they continue to gamble despite consequences because they're trying to hit their reset. Their reset button is that big win, that big win. You know what happens in the big win, Rob? You know from personal experience, if that big win happens, number one, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Win, lose, or draw. Once that dopamine door is open, Once that condition starts progressing and it's open, you're going to gamble, win, lose, or draw. A client last night, 22, 23 years old now, a year out of college, he played college football.
Okay.
Successfully. What wakes him up at night is knowing that he was up at one point in time when he was a junior in college, $250,000. That is what wakes him up at night. He wants to get back to that. That's a difference, right? Not that he went into debt. It's not his debt level. It's that $250,000 that he had and that he lost.
Yeah.
I say this to my folks that I see. Once that door is open, if you get $1 million, it's gone. You're either chasing or trying to make more, but it's gone and then some. So this guy on a recent relapse, 2-3 weeks ago, went up 150 and lost it. So I say this, live by the sword, you die by the sword with gambling disorder.
The dollar amounts then are kind of arbitrary, but it's more about what emotions are aroused by that dollar amount. So in this particular case, it's like, yes, it's a lot of money that this person is winning or was up, but it was more about the feelings that came along with it that are motivating him to want to go back to that position. Is that fair?
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. And I should have had that disclaimer about it being arbitrary. I'm very careful because I know who listens to these great podcasts. I'm very careful with my clients. And listen, everybody's got different. It doesn't matter. It's what you just said, which is correct. It's the emotions and all that come from the soul, too, that's connected to that. That's what's connected to that, that I try to tap into eventually. But some of the differences is just that, the reset button. Everything comes into their answers to their life and this condition and the people they've hurt. Everything that they try to justify is in that big win that never happens. And let's say that you're the less than 1% and it does happen. It's still going to be gone. A lot of my sessions are to confront that cognitive distortion. And Rob, I told you before we went on, I did my homework and I listened to some of my friends talk on here. I consider you a friend. You're doing fantastic work here. But you, with your opening podcast, you talked about your own personal experience and remembering the pain. Do you remember talking about that? This is what I spoke about yesterday to one of my clients is listen, don't think about that big win. Think about that pain, that point on a daily basis is what I ask them to do. Even write it on a post-it note, put it on their phone. Think about the breakup. Think about the depths of where this took you to versus that thing that you feel is going to reset. Because that's a cognitive distortion called selective, I believe, perception. Only remembering the good times, right? When I work with folks with alcohol use disorder, they talk about all the great parties and the good times and the trips. They forget about that 9th DUI. What I found with gambling disorder, they think about all the big, especially the first wins, you know, but some recent ones, they don't think about that $150,000 missing from the mortgage account. You know what it looks like with substances? Let's take alcohol use disorder. And I bring up these examples because it helps people, even my clients who have gambling disorder. When I bring up gambling or drinking examples, they go, oh, that's right. But for instance, you know, working with people with a lot of people with alcohol use disorder, the consequence comes from DUIs. So if they've got 4 DUIs, they hear a guy's got 7, they go, I got 3 more to go.
Can we talk about something real for a minute? If your gambling has started to feel less like fun and more like stress, trust me, you're not alone. Millions of us know what it's like to say, just one more bet, or feel that urge that's really difficult to explain. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Evive, a sponsor of today's video. Think of it as having a recovery companion right in your pocket, someone who actually understands what you're going through. No lectures, no pressure, just practical tools and genuine support when those challenging moments hit. Download Evive now and you'll get guaranteed free access through 2026. Not a trial or a limited version, but the complete platform, completely free. Because Evive believes that everyone deserves access to support that works for them. Download Evive today and take the first step towards changing your relationship to gambling. Evive is only available in select countries. That's a fascinating point, though, that you're able to use alcohol examples to kind of illuminate facts for people struggling with gambling. So when I see commercial for alcohol, it says drink responsibly. And I actually know what that means mathematically. I know that if I get to a 0.08, I can't drive a car legally. Yeah. I don't know what that looks like for gambling, to gamble responsibly. Does that mean 1% of my money? Does that mean $1,000? Like, I don't know what that means. Do you think that the actual math behind it is what makes these examples tangible for people?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm glad you brought this up, because this is very, very important. And this is where I start with most of my clients, just so you know. What does gambling responsibly look like?
Right.
And I'll shoot that back to my client. What do you think it looks like? Right?
Yeah.
So with me, I keep it very simple. Some of my colleagues have some very, very sophisticated, perhaps, you know, you can call this harm reduction. Okay, you want to see if we can do this? I set let's talk about two limits. If we talk about the Super Bowl, for instance, okay, how much and what? How long? So if you want to gamble, let's come up with a money amount that will work within your recreational budget and an hourly amount that's okay with spouse and family. That, right? Mm-hmm. Appropriate levels of time, appropriate levels of money. Let's start there. Now, 9.5 times out of 10 with the people that by the time they come to me and search me out, or their wife does, or their mother, or their father, or their husband, right? They usually can't do it, Rob, you know? And some of my work is pointing that out, that you're mad at wife for saying this. Why do you think she said this? You know, having that talk with them so that they can feel what their spouse is feeling. Why do you think he sent you here? Why are we talking about this? So we start off with what responsible gambling looks like, you know?
I like to express, but I understand that's a contentious point for some reason in our space. Is I think there should be an actual definition of what responsible gambling is from the casino industry. Mm. Because it's on you to be subjective about it and help them try to reach a conclusion that works for them. That's not scalable. That's something that you have to do on a very individual basis. And it's putting all the work onto your plate. So, I mean, respect to you for doing it. And it seems you do individually. It's just so difficult because you can look at drinking. There's clear cut numbers to it. That's one of my pet peeves with it. Like, please define it for us, guys. Like, that, if anyone's watching that works at like ROGA, ICRGC, whatever those acronyms are, define it. That's what we need. We need a definition, please.
Yeah, I got to tell you, with working with this condition, this is one of the challenges of it. And one of the differences between substance use disorder and gambling disorder, measuring that behavior versus, you know, the actual drinking, right? It's up to the individual with my whole approach. And I meet the client where they're at. We see, and let's talk about sports betting here. Let's talk about some of our, you know, you and I both are big fans, you know.
Yeah.
When you watch the 76ers on TNT and Charles Barkley's talking about after the first quarter what the over-under is, and then people start talking about Charles Barkley and his gambling, and then Michael Jordan and his gambling, and they're gambling millions of dollars. Robbie, don't you think they have a problem? You know what my answer is, Rob? I don't know, but they're gambling millions of dollars away. They're worth $200 million.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they might have an issue. They might not. We don't know.
If it was about a dollar amount, then it becomes really objective on how to go about getting help.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I know once I spend $100, I need to get a treatment. But it's like, because it's so subjective, like you're saying, people can justify in their own heads, like, I'm okay. This isn't a problem for me. And you can keep kicking that down the road until it becomes too overwhelming. And then you're like, all right, now I need help. And then, Robbie, they show up to your door and they're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt and they're in a terrible position because there was no definition ahead of time on when to stop.
And I've told you this, and I'm this way with substances too. I'm not for or against it. I would just like a safer product with the gambling disorder world in the sports world. And the reason why I do what I do with, we'll just call it my day job, and what I do with this job, being a clinician, is I am seeing, and I'm a bit biased because all I see are young males right around 20 to 28, former athletes, active athletes, fans, sports guys, right? That love sports, and now this, and they think this is killing them. It's not the sport. It's not the fan. It's not their competitiveness that's killing them. It's gambling disorder. that I believe is a genetic predisposition that has been triggered by life stressors or trauma or something, right? And I heard this in a couple of your former talks with peers with this condition. A lot of my clients want to know, but Robbie, I want to know why I bet all the money away. I want to know why I'm so much in debt. And I honestly tell them, we can do a little bit of investigating, but let's stop the bleeding. Knowing why might be a lifelong journey.
Yeah.
But what we need to do, and when I say stop the bleeding, let's look at what we need to do to get you in a safe place to be able to stop, to have an opportunity to stop, you know?
Yeah.
And with a behavioral process addiction, one of the treatment differences from a substance use disorder is preventative measures. The four preventative measures that I was taught three, okay? But I've got an additional one with sports bettors. The first one is financial management. We've got to get you away from any exposure to discretionary income. There are several ways we can do that, you know? The second one is online access. Mm-hmm. We just talked about the phone. This is 24/7, 365.
Yep.
It's really, I almost say it's unregulated.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? If someone has a drink in it, can you imagine pain or alcohol having no regulations? There are some regulations, but the online thing, it's so accessible.
Imagine if you're watching TV with your friends and all of a sudden there's an ad for heroin. Like,
exactly.
You would be thrown off by that, I would imagine. But yet we see that with gambling at least two times every commercial break.
Exactly. I just think this needs to be regulated more. That's all. Yep. I'm not a guy that says take away sports betting. I'm not saying that. It just needs to be a safer product, right? Mm-hmm. And we've run into that with other addictive products in the past, tobacco, alcohol, all these things. So, but anyways, back to the online access, maybe some online like BetBlocker, Gamban, something in there. So online access, financial management, time. When does the devil come to you, right, and tap you on the shoulder? Is it during the Patriots game or the Eagles, the NFC Championship Sunday? Is it when you come home late at night? Is it in the morning? Is it at 3 a.m.? Let's look at these times and structure those times. So it's time, online access, and financial management. But the fourth one that I talked to about sports bettors, right, is sports participation and sports viewing.
Can someone with a gambling problem watch sports as a fan without gambling on the games?
Absolutely. Now, everybody's different. And I meet everybody where they're at. But I can feel the fear when I'm talking to a client in a consultation call. And they're saying, the last thing I want to hear is this guy tell me that I can't go watch an Eagles game. Or I can't go watch a Cowboys game. Yeah. Or I can't go play golf with my buddies. Who am I to take that away from them? That could be triggering in and of itself. So how do we learn to do that? One. Two, how do we relearn to enjoy the sport without the action? Action and competition are two different things. When I teach and train a workshop that I put together with this, I talk about this to a lot of therapists who might know a little bit about sports or who might not know. How do we take out that action and separate it from the joy of competing and being a fan? You can absolutely do it, but we have to relearn it. A lot of that comes down to, you know, kind of your detox period, because all that dopamine, your body, mind, and soul gets used to it just from action. You know, the risk, it's so exciting. With that hope of winning something larger, that's what rules your dopaminergic pathways. That's what does it. And when you stop that, your mind, body, and soul is going, oh no, I don't, you can do it. You can't get that back from the things that you're supposed to. It takes time.
What's like your best practices for watching sports as a fan instead of watching them as a sports bettor? And I know we can't get too individualized because it could be different for every person. But if someone's like now in a spot where it's been a couple months since they placed the last bet, but they're going to be walking into a Super Bowl party and all their friends are going to be gambling on the game. What should that person be doing? They're going in with the intention of watching it, but they don't want to gamble on it. What's some best practices for them?
Yeah, and you said a lot there, Rob, in this question, because there's a lot that goes into this. We spoke about this too, and I use the same principles with alcohol use disorder, how to stay safe, let's say going to the Christmas party at their favorite bar that they used to really score drugs, get drunk, get in trouble, got three DUIs, you know. So how do we do that in a safe way? You know, and depending on where they're at in the recovery and where they're at with resetting their dopamine, it might be enjoyable, it might be not so enjoyable, or it might be miserable. But at the end of the day, if they're in recovery and their priority is to not gamble, then there are things that they can do, just like if they went to a bar. Number one, let's just say what I tell people is take your keys if you're going to a party, even if your spouse is with you. Because if it gets too bad and it means your recovery or your life, get in that car and leave. Do what you have to do. Have a way out. If you're going to a Super Bowl party and you're not wanting to bet and you know everybody's handing off their phones to each other, where are you going? Are you going to DraftKings? You have to be ready for that. Take your keys, okay? Be able to leave if that's the worst thing. And you tell them what you need to tell them, because if that means your life, which it could be, depending on the reason why they're wanting to stop gambling, that's the most important thing, is have a way to get out of there. But what I would say, leading up to the Super Bowl, like the Friday, the Saturday, try to remember why you're in recovery. And what I have seen with a lot of clients, they forget.
The last time that I had an urge to gamble was when the Eagles played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, which would have been February 23, I think it was.
Yeah.
And the reason that it was a temptation for me, I was about like 90 to 100 days off the bet. I don't remember quite the date, but the reason it was tempting is because I hosted a Super Bowl party at my house. I was living in Philly, and because the Eagles were playing, if you've ever seen footage of what happens after the Eagles win a playoff game, like the whole city goes crazy and like
there's, you guys blow up your city.
Exactly right. So everyone was like in anticipation of that, so everyone was betting on the game because they were like, we want to have an extra reason to celebrate. And I also wasn't drinking that night because I was in a weight loss kick. So for me, it was like, it was hell. I was watching a football game that I was supposed to be enjoying, but I couldn't gamble on it. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't smoking. I wasn't doing anything. I had buffalo chicken dip, I think. And so for me, it was like really, really hard. And that's why I phrased that question, because even 100 days, 90 days into the recovery, I was struggling to watch it. And I'm imagining this is going to be a big hurdle for a lot of people. It could be their first Super Bowl clean. Just wanted to give them some best practices for that.
But here in this situation, this goes to one of my points. We got to start small, man. I see people with gambling disorder all the time. It's big. Everything's big. Let's blow this up. I want to win big. I want to risk big. I want to do this big. Why don't we just sit with wife and kids and cook something and keep it simple? Let's forget the day, the whole day pregame. You know what pregame is for people in early recovery? That's dangerous.
Yeah.
One of my favorite pregame shows is College Game Day. I love that show because I love college football. I'm a Texas guy. I love it.
Yeah.
But you know what? From 9 a.m., it's and now they've incorporated lines in their picks.
Yep. I saw the Timothy Chalamet, like that was a big thing trending when he gave all his picks on College Game Day. Yeah. And then he picked like all the games right, I think.
I love it. They've got comedians, actors, sports guys. You know, it's a fantastic show. But you know what? If you're in early recovery, my consultation is not to watch it. You want to watch the Longhorns, click in, kickoff. Same thing with Super Bowl. Super Bowl starts that Friday night. Pregame starts Friday night to Sunday. I love it. But you know what? If you're trying to overcome something that's killing you, maybe we keep this simple. No party. Stay at home with loved ones. You know? Now, I know some aren't going to do that. But if you go to a party, have your keys. Have your way out. Maybe forget the pregame or postgame. Maybe not go to the party so early. Check your environment. Check your people, places, and substances and everything else. Now, if you can drink moderately, drink moderately, but know what an alcohol buzz does to people. it's going to put you in a dangerous spot. So check your substances too. Have a way out. Leave your phone at the house. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a tough one. That's a big ask.
Or the car.
Yeah, or give phone to wife or friend, right? Get that phone out of your hands. Go later. Have your keys. Before you go to the party, remember why you're in recovery. Remember.
If you had told me at that point to leave my phone at home, have someone manage my finances, my ego would tell me I could do this myself. Mm. Why is that a trap that people will set for themselves? And why should they like not go down that path is what I'm kind of asking.
No, Robin, I've heard from other talks and I hear from my clients what ego does with this condition, you know, what ego does with any addiction disorder. Is it worth the risk? Now, the phone thing is a big ask, and I know that. So perhaps we would have had a discussion of what can we do to meet in the middle? What can we do to keep you safe?
Sure.
And what happened the last time that you did this? And again, let's remember why you're doing this. What's more important? But if you go down a trail too far, then it's over. If you go to that moment where there is no return, it's over. You're continuing the same behaviors with the same results, which is insanity. So it would be my job during those 50 minutes, 45 minutes to talk through that and to still give you that option. This is up to you. Take your phone. You can do whatever you want. These are my consultations because let's remember the last time you bet. And I did this last night with my last client. I want you to think about that moment. About that moment during the breakup, during this, during whatever that moment is, think about that moment before you go to this. You've got to continuously think about that pain because that selective perception, that cognitive distortion comes back. Oh, I can probably, you know, and that's what, that's the continuum that keeps this condition alive in that person, right? Is it worth the risk, you know, and walking through that and letting them remember? That's why I was saying, talk to your therapist, talk to your sponsor, talk to someone during this. And as I'm saying this, I've got to do better in the next 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl with either phone check-ins, with my sessions. What are we doing Super Bowl weekend? This is a tough time of the year, Rob, for sports bettors. You know why? Number one, where you and I live up here in the Northeast, it's cold. It's a hard month for people that aren't even in recovery. That's number one, why this area is a very vulnerable time for people who gamble. The next two are obvious reasons. Super Bowl, National College Championships, and March Madness, all during this very cold and dark time. Mm-hmm. We have to be in the moment and continue to check in. And it's very hard for gamblers, those who suffer from gambling disorder because of March Madness and Super Bowl. But there's also all the other things that leading up into this, you know, it's the NFC and the AFC championship. It's all the playoffs. It's all these things. And if your pathology is tied to sports and competition, it can be very challenging. It can be very challenging. Yeah.
I mean, it's also like Champions League, Premier League. So even the European markets, there's constant. But Robbie, thank you so much for coming on today and for sharing this. To anyone that's watching, remember that leading up to the Super Bowl, make sure you're checking in with yourself. Make sure you're asking yourself the questions of, is this really worth it? Is this really what I want to do? And if you want to find out more about Robbie, then check the description of this video. And another thing for you, if you want to hear a video of someone who's in recovery from gambling addiction, watch this video and let's keep getting better together one day at a time.